Hello, everybody. Today you are listening to Pop Sub with myself, Christopher Furman, and my compadre, James Fryer. We're here to talk about what's new in entertainment and media, but not necessarily.
This week's show is brought to you by GoRageous for all of your unique flooring needs. Hey, Christopher.
Hey, James. How you doing?
Great. We're talking about boonies today?
Boonies. Yes, we are talking about boonies.
It's a bit of a strange name, don't you think?
It actually is the only thing that caught my eye about it.
Really?
It's a National Geographic show.
Yeah.
And so usually National Geographic is all about these beautiful cameras and beautiful scenery and top-notch cinematographers. And then all of a sudden I'm looking through the National Geographic things and there's a show called The Boonies. And I actually thought, that's so bizarre. This has got to be some kind of weird, quirky new show. And it wasn't.
You don't think it was quirky?
Oh, it was quirky. But it wasn't new.
Yeah, that's true. It was from 2016. So I don't know how popular this is of a subject. But I thought the name was a bit odd because I don't think of it as being the Boonies. These people are off grid. I think of the Boonies as being kind of out there, but not necessarily off the grid. So I just thought it was kind of a weird name.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I only heard the word boonie one time, and I think it was the fourth episode, maybe? And it was quick. Bear Claw. I heard him say something to the effect out in the boonies. And I was like, oh, somebody actually said the title's name.
Yeah, so this show is about four people, and there's actually, of the quote four people, there's two individual guys and then two couples, two married couples and two individual people.
Well, they kind of divided up into four geographical spots.
And it's about, supposed to be about these guys who are living off the grid. And I think we might be able to take some issue with who's actually living off the grid and how much.
Yeah.
But is as Christopher said, it's on National Geographic, which was a little bit disappointing. I guess, spoiler alert for this is, I'm spoiling my opinion of the show. I felt like this was not really up to the level of what I would consider National Geographic level, except in the case of these photographers, because these guys who are doing the filming have to go through some pretty extreme circumstances to get their footage. And in some cases, I literally think they're risking their lives to get this footage. And I'm not sure it's worth it.
Well, yeah, especially through the cave scenes. So we should probably tell a little bit about exactly what the show is. So the show is basically, at least it starts off explaining what the show is about in the kind of the credits at the beginning, that these are people that live off the grid. And so it's almost like they define living in the boonies as somebody who lives off the grid. And I don't completely disagree with that. Because when I think of people living out in the boonies, I do think of them having at least not any electricity.
Really? Okay. Well, I guess we have different definitions of boonies.
Right.
Boonies, to me, is anywhere that's more than like half an hour from a city.
Well, I like using the word boonies to make fun of people.
If you can't get to a Costco within 30 minutes, you're in the boonies.
Fair enough.
If you can't get better than 128 kilobits for your DSL service, you're in the boonies.
Well, it's funny about the boonies is the narrator to this whole show is a guy by the name of Michael Madsen, who does, he must have like nearly 100 films under his belt. And this guy only does films where he's a city guy.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, like he's been in Reservoir Dogs. I mean, Kill Bill. I mean, he's been in some crazy. They all take place in the city, right?
That's so funny. I didn't recognize his voice at all.
Well, that's the thing. He's got like one of these voices. It's not, you know, terribly outstanding, but it goes with his like, I'm a city slicker, I'm a dude kind of a voice, right? I don't know. It's normal. It's like, it's not outstanding. Anyways. Yeah.
So spoiler alert, we are going to talk about the show as if you've seen it because it doesn't really matter. It's a reality show and there is so little content in this damn show anyway. This is one of the things that drove me crazy about it was how slow it is. I mean, this is 8 episodes, which could easily have been done in 4. Easily been done in 4.
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of these, that's a whole recipe for reality shows. Repeat, 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 repeat. You really have to be like eating a meal and have like company with you to be able to like not go crazy. Something else has to be going on in the room when you watch these reality shows, which is so funny. That's why I thought this was so unusual that National Geographic did a reality show.
Well, aren't all their shows reality shows?
Yeah, it's not.
This is humans in it though.
Right. So when you're in National Geographic and you're out there in this, the Sierra and you're filming, and you catch something that looks good, you use it. You know, if it doesn't look good, you don't use it. What you don't do is you ask the animal or critter, or hey, can you do that one more time? That's what they don't do. I've been on plenty of sets where we've shot reality films or reality shows, I mean. Mm-hmm. And yeah, somebody may say something really clever, but it's just not quite right. So you ask them to say it over again and then you shoot it and that's what you use.
Oh yeah. Well, I had that in the news. Back when I was living in Raleigh, we had some fires come through Raleigh. And the news crew just happened to come through my apartment complex for whatever reason. And I was outside, so they talked to me for a few minutes. And then as they got their little take, as the reporter's walking away, I said something to the effect of, yeah, it's kind of like 101 Dalmatians with all the gray and black soot coming down. And it's like it's covering the cars like they're Dalmatians. And this was at the time when one of the Dalmatians had come, movies had come out, 101 Dalmatians.
Oh, really?
And she stopped on her heel and spun around and got, and, you know, made me re-say that so that she'd get it on camera. And that's what they played on the news because it was, it played into the, you know, the media of 101 Dalmatians. So, you know, whatever plays.
Right.
Well, it's getting that memorable quote.
I've always thought the perfect example of an oxymoron is serious TV journalism.
So the show has, as I said, four people. The first one we're introduced to is a guy named Joe Ray, who's out in the Ozark Mountains in Arkansas, and he is basically a caveman. And if you want to know what a modern day dwarf looks like, this is a modern day dwarf. I mean, not that he's small, but he looks like a dwarf from some medieval, not even medieval, but some fantasy film that, you know, he's literally living underground, digging for minerals. And he's got a beard that's almost as long as he is.
Please don't tell any dwarf jokes, but if you do, make sure you keep them short.
He's absolutely nutballs.
I never thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right. I mean, he even everything he owns is stashed in these caves. And then every year the floods come, the rains come, and those caves fill up and he's got to move them to higher underground passages.
Yeah, he's got a bunch of caves and he has a bunch of different things stored in a bunch of different caves. But this guy, like I said, he's crazy. And a lot of this questions, which was not answered throughout a lot of the series, my main question was, what land are they living on? And they finally reveal in Joe's case that he is basically a caretaker for someone else's land. So there's this undeveloped land out in the Ozarks. And he knows the owner, and the owner allows him to live on his land. And he chases off, quote, trespassers with his gun, which was a little extreme, but that's how it is, I guess.
Well, he hunted all his own food. He made his own jerky from the food. We're talking caveman, right?
Yeah, he did some of that.
Well, I was going there.
But
he also
goes into town. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. So I was about ready to say, but then he has these cans of food. And you're thinking through the whole series, well, where is he getting the money for these cans? And then finally reveal it halfway through the series.
What? He's mining minerals. He's digging minerals. He's hacking into the earth to find rare minerals so he can go and sell them so he can go to his store once in a while and buy some canned food and some beef jerky.
Yeah, yeah.
But he also does some hunting. He has a friend that he goes hunting with. I think they take a boar out at one point, or a wild pig.
Yeah.
Joe was really interesting. I think he was one of the more interesting characters on this show, and I don't hate him, but I think he's absolutely crazy, and he has a death wish. As you mentioned,
he was tragic with the wife, right?
Oh, I mean, well, there's a tragic backstory, and so this is, you can understand why he's retreated from the world, because he had a bad 15 years of his wife dying from dementia, which is, you know, pretty rough time.
Yeah.
But, so we see the caves flooding, and he's walking into flooding caves. And I am not a caveman myself, but I know some basic survival tactics. And one survival tactic is A, don't go into caves. B, don't go into caves if they're flooding. And C, don't go into caves if they're flooding.
While it's raining.
He says, oh my God. Yeah, I don't understand. He's got such weird ideas of survival tactics. He's like,
well, you were concerned about the camera guy like I was, yes?
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, going into the flooding caves is one thing. I mean, he just keeps going deeper and deeper and deeper. And I'm like, if I was a camera guy, I'd be like, Joe, you can take the camera and show us where you went, but I'm not going in there anymore, because they're squeezing down into places they can barely squeeze into. And then they're swimming through parts of it. And he builds a bridge at one point to get across it. This guy is absolutely mad. He has a death wish, and I suspect he will eventually die in his cave.
Oh, I was thinking that the whole time. I go, someday like 50 years or 100 years from now, someone's going to be digging in those caves and they're going to find his remains.
No, they probably won't. In a million years,
fossilized remains?
His fossilized remains will be found in a million years from now.
Yeah, perhaps. But it is Arkansas. Nothing lasts long there with all that wetness.
And just one other point of it, of his death wish is, not only do they have floods, but they also have regular earthquakes.
Oh, and right. I forgot
after one
about
of these
that.
Earthquakes, one of these, after one of these earthquakes, half of his cave is collapsed in. Most of his caves are collapsed in, and he's in there with the film crew, and they spend hours trying to find a new way out because the old way has been blocked off.
I know.
Absolutely mad. Absolutely mad.
It may be the reason why this lasted only one season, and it also may be the reason why there's multiple camera operators. Like, they had one, like, for the first few episodes, and somewhere around, I don't know, how many episodes are there totally?
8.
Yeah, I think by the last episode, somebody goes, yeah, I'm done. Just left and had to replace them.
The best part of the show is the film guys, because they are willing to go in there, and they get some great shots. And to be fair, Joe's caves are like a sprawling mansion. Some of these rooms that he's found are huge and cavernous, and it just goes on and on. I mean, mile after mile of rooms. It's like a free mansion, except, you know, it's wet, it's dark, and you will die down there. Aside from that.
Well, it's like you always hear about people dying in the maze, right? It's, they just can't find their way out. But he's got food stashed everywhere, so.
Well, hopefully. I don't know. I mean, a lot of that food is now probably crushed under several thousand tons of rock.
Yeah.
I still watch the show because there are some things I haven't told you about Joe that will shock and amaze you. Well, not shock and amaze you, probably just delight you. So the next one we get interested to, his name is Gary Malin or Malin. Well, that's his norm name, but his real name is Bear Claw.
Yeah.
And Bear Claw lives in West Idaho in the Rockies. And of the guys that we see, this is by far the most spectacular landscape. This is beautiful rolling countryside and mountains, and that's where I would want to live.
Here's my favorite guy in the whole show.
Absolutely. The rest of them are kind of scrubs.
He was Bear a real McCoy too. I don't think anything was fake about that guy.
Well, I will say they definitely pushed him a little bit. They pushed his story a little bit beyond. I think he spends a lot more time in that cabin that he spends time in the winter. I think he spends a lot more time in that cabin.
Oh.
Plus, I also found out that he bought a truck.
Oh, really? Well, here's the thing.
But no,
this character, this individual, the way he talked seems like the type of person that would live out in the boonies off the grid. And by the way, for those of you that haven't watched the show, his main transportation is a horse, not a truck. Mm-hmm. And
right.
I have to tell you, when I watched him, I go, yeah, I'd like to do that when I turn 62 or 50 or whatever.
I think that if anybody has their personality and their way of life woven into their DNA, I think it's Bear Claw. I think Bear Claw was born to live this life.
Yeah.
This is what it seems like to me.
And he was raised on a huge farm with a huge family. Right.
Yeah, and he only bought the truck. Actually, I think it was a van. He only bought the van so he could go visit his family. So let's back up. So Bear Claw, if you want to imagine pioneer times and what we think of as a mountain man, this is a genuine mountain man. And he even belongs to some mountain man society, which is crazy. So he is out there looking like he's wearing all skins. Everything he's wearing is a skin of something else. And he's traveling. He lives in a teepee. And he's traveling with two horses and two dogs. So even though he's out there, quote, alone, I think he has also got the smartest setup because he's got his own little pack going there. And more importantly, and this is what I found really interesting, this is the highlight of the series for me, is once you get to see the entire series and you see all the people who he interacts with, you realize that he might be out there living alone, but he's right in there with his neighbors. He has a really deep and close connection to a bunch of neighbors who live in that area. And they are checking in on him and he's checking in on them. And anytime he needs anything, he can go to them. And it's just a really nice way of showing you can live independently, but intelligently and with other people. So he's not out there alone.
And this reminds me of this book Walden that we either read either in high school or college, where Henry David Thoreau is living out on this pond in the forest, and he's searching and seeking solitude and self-reliance. That's the whole point of the book. But at the end of the book, and as the book goes on, you find out that for the most part, we can live in solitude, but we really can't survive happily without neighbors. And the point is, humans still need each other to survive.
Right. I think this, and this is a great, great point. Bearclaw makes that point, I think, on film.
Absolutely.
But he's still out there alone, but he's doing it right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I will also say, these guys are all roughing it, and some of them are living in what I would consider squalor. I don't know how else to put it. Bearclaw, I don't think is, even though he has the fewest possessions of anybody.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And he's
absolutely
living a pretty rough and ready life. Everything he has is pretty well crafted. Like he has all...
I mean, it's leather.
Yeah.
And it looks absolutely beautifully clean and tidy.
It was clean.
He was organized.
It was well put together. It was designed for his lifestyle. So he's got his shit going together. I mean, if we're going to have a fashion show put together from all these people, he wins hands down by a mile.
Yeah, he's like the zenith of a prepared mountain guy. Especially compared to the couple. Yikes.
Yeah. Well, the next people up are Doc and Jenny Leverett. And they live in Washington. I guess it's Northwest Washington. I think it was Northwest Washington. So this is the Pacific Northwest. They live basically in the woods. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about them?
Well, for one thing, they're the complete opposite. They live in a pseudo treehouse that's just kind of, it's an absolute mess. Their place is kind of thrown together like scavengers digging around a heap dump. And the lumber is just kind of pieced together. It's not natural or milled even.
Oh, no. I'm going to have to take exception to that.
What do you mean?
Most of the lumber they have in there at one point was milled.
Oh, yeah. Lumber, yeah, yeah.
But then was used for something. Discarded and then reused to build their house.
And they did a poor job of it as well.
Which I have some respect for. I have some respect for reusing materials.
It looked a little third world.
Yeah, third world is a good way to put it, but that's being a little bit generous.
Well, the thing is that he escaped the city to kind of relieve himself of all the problems that cities have. And then he recreates this dumpy, dirty city out in the woods in his treehouse. I mean, it almost kind of sounds like he's a little bit of a crybaby. I'm not saying his problems aren't real.
Well, I don't think he got along with people particularly well. I think that's what he was trying to escape.
Maybe.
And let's give him a little bit, flesh him out a little bit. He's a veteran. He was in the service for a number of years. He got beat up in there. I don't know what injury. I don't remember which injuries he got from where, but he had a broken back. He had broken neck. He has a fused wrist. He's kind of a mess. He needs a little bit of health care.
Yeah.
And not sure how he's getting it. But the point about his,
well, he does have his wife.
Yeah. Through their herbs, that'll fix him up. The point of their surroundings that they built for themselves is if they would, I don't know what they do with their days. It seems like if they're not, they don't have a lot to do aside from, you know, gathering the materials they need to survive. It seems like they would have enough time.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure about that.
To put more effort into their treehouse and make it nicer. I mean, if you're just sitting around all day, it seems like you'd have time to do that.
Well, listen, I have actually been on trips where I am alone or without a place to stay for long periods of time. And I'm telling you, most of your day is spent hunting for food.
That's a good point.
Either gathering or trying to find animals. I mean, you really don't have your whole day of leisure. That's not happening. It is curious, though, they have the guy going out every day hunting, climbing in a tree and whatnot. And I wonder what the wife's doing all day.
Yeah, I don't know what she does all day.
But, you know,
their garden is very small.
Peculiar.
And the reason they live in a treehouse, do you remember why they're living in a treehouse, Christopher?
Was it animals?
To stay safe from bears.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
yeah, it's kind of odd since a bear can do lots of things, but one of the things they're really good at is climbing.
Well, another thing is, this is part of that cleanliness thing again. If they were a little more clean and tidy, bears aren't going to be coming around. Bears don't look for people. Bears look for like garbage or actual natural things that they already eat. But if you got a filthy place, yeah, some bears are going to come around because the stink will probably attract them.
Well, and the bears would come and raid their not particularly well protected garden.
I don't know
how you protect a garden from bears, but I assume people have figured it out since they've been living for thousands of years. And that was one of the really weird things that he said. He says, no humans have been here before. I'm like, what are you talking about? Humans have lived there for like 3,000 years. This seems like such an ignorant thing to say. I don't understand how someone can even utter that statement.
I thought that was so funny too. I think the Native Americans have been coming from the north to the south and the south to the north, right through the area where he is at for, I don't know, a millennial. I don't know, but I think he's not the most educated man.
Where here's the thing about Doc. I know I'm beating him up, but I don't want to beat him up. I think he's a fine guy because when we see him in his more exposed moments, he seems like a decent person, but I think he's putting a persona on for the camera. And that persona that he's putting on, I can't stand. At one point he talks about the three S's, shoot, shovel, shut up.
Oh yeah.
So he's basically threatening anybody that comes onto his land. And yes, it's never clear whose land he's on. Did he buy this land?
Brutal.
Is he squatting on some BLM land? I don't know what he's doing. And this is kind of I take issue with the show. The show should let us know what their situation is.
Well, he also makes fun of other people, right? Like he's the guy and they're not just because they're from that area.
Oh yeah. Just the last thing I want to point out with that I thought was so funny was they're in the treehouse during a really bad storm. And they're literally holding onto the tree for dear life. And I'm thinking, wow, this is one more example why you don't live in a treehouse. Because if the tree falls over, that's going to basically not only ruin your house, but probably also kill you.
Yeah, that tree didn't look that strong from the start. I don't know where they picked it.
Moving on to the highlight of the show, this guy named Dan Burton, who lives on Beaver Island in Michigan. Is that on Lake Michigan? I can't keep these lakes straight. Yeah, it's one of the Great Lakes.
Yeah, it's on.
Do you remember that? Was that Lake Michigan?
Yeah, that was Lake Michigan. It was awesome.
Okay,
I mean, it was a lot of water, and he lived on an island.
Yeah, Beaver Island, and he owns 20 acres out there. Okay, that's fine. What was your take on Dan?
Here's the crazy thing about that guy, and I think that's why you are asking me about him. I didn't feel like he was living off the grid, not at all. I mean, he had a pretty decent boat. I think his house was unusually small, but
I don't think we saw all of his houses. I think we only saw one of his buildings,
and they looked well crafted. Like,
fair. They had siding on. I'll say that.
Yeah. Let's just say this: it beats the couple's house by a mansion compared to that.
Oh, absolutely. No. I mean, it's literally the difference between living in a broken down shed and living in a house.
I think the only reason he was on this show is because they were trying to find somebody that doesn't live in the forest, right? They're like, okay, here's this guy that lives on water. Listen, I have a friend.
Yeah, he lives on an island, but in forest. It's forested.
Yeah, I guess so. I have a friend and he travels all over the whole world and all he has is his sailboat. That's it. And that's what I call living off the grid. This guy does not live off the grid.
No, I mean, they probably are about equal because he's going to port all the time. And I think Dan is going, quote, into the port as well. To put this in perspective, he owns his land. And the reason of course, it depends on what your definition of the grid is. If your definition is just, you have to have power. So the question is this guy really off the grid? Because granted, he's not on an electric grid. As far as we know, he's not on an electric grid and he's got his own sewer. But aside from that, he's got a regular supply of gasoline for his many vehicles.
Oh, right. The propane. He's got utilities.
And everything. Well, I'm also thinking about his vehicles, the gas for his car, his truck, his boat.
His stove.
Yeah. And then milled lumber. He has no problem getting milled lumber because he keeps building stuff. At one point, he has his two grown sons help him build another lodge out in the woods so they can go hunting during the wintertime. And it's a good thing OSHA wasn't around for this because it was a sea of OSHA violations. And one of his sons nearly dies because he falls off a ladder because the other son jumps off at the wrong time because their dad is telling them what to do. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
This guy is...
Well, in my definition of what living in the boonies is, he definitely lives in the boonies. But according to the show, living off the grid, not so much.
Yeah, he's very tenuous as to, is this really off the grid living? I don't know. It kind of, but no. Because...
Yeah. Well, I don't want to talk too much about him because frankly, he was a bore.
I know, but I want to take him down a couple of stops. There's a couple of notches.
Oh, okay.
And the first thing we see him do is he's driving his boat around looking for his, I don't even remember what the hell he was looking for, but he was going to a smaller island. And do you remember what he did in his small little boat in the middle of Lake Michigan, quote, off the grid?
He ran out of fuel.
No, he ran aground and busted his propeller.
Oh, right.
So he was stuck on an island. And this, there are two things that really struck me about this. He seemed genuinely scared to have to spend a night on a little island in Lake Michigan in the middle of the summer. Like, is he not at all prepared? Yeah. If he's not prepared, he's not really living. I mean, these people, a lot of these people just aren't prepared for the lives that they're living. And then secondly, the way he got off or got out was he called on his radio and someone finally came and picked him up. So
yeah, that's another thing.
Again, that's not really, is that living off the grid? It seems like you're relying on the grid to save your bacon when you run aground living on Lake Michigan. I mean, if there's one thing you should be able to figure out how to do is how to run aground, or maybe be prepared enough to have an extra propeller.
Most people don't carry extra propellers, but I tell you what they do.
If you're living off the grid and you know you can't drive your boat for anything, you're a bad boat driver, maybe it's the kind of thing you should bring because it's the kind of thing you can't fix on your own. You can't make your own propeller.
Well, that's the thing I thought was kind of funny. You actually can repair your propeller with a little hammer. For example, I've had a boat where the propeller hit a couple of rocks and gets all tweaked up. You take it off, you bend it back out and you put it back on. I mean, it's not perfect, but at least you can get home.
Yeah. So I guess, Dan was not impressive. I was not impressed by Dan.
No. National Geographic should have done a better job of finding a booty.
Well, see, that's the kind of the thing though. How do you find people who are living off the grid if they're off the grid?
Right.
So we're probably not seeing the real people who are really living off the grid, the real diehard off-gridders.
I'm guessing they're finding him through police reports. So I didn't hear very many positive things about the show. So I guess this is the reason why it was only on one season. But this is Pop Sub. And Pop Sub is all about what's popular. And reality shows have been popular now for about, I don't know, over 10 years.
I'd say 20 easily.
Yeah, probably 20. They're very popular. Another thing is, this is on Hulu, and Hulu made this pop up as one of their popular selections. Maybe awareness has been made through the movie Nomadland. I think people are looking into trying to find alternative ways of living because they had this pandemic experience. And now, so the big thing right now that's the most popular with people is, what are some ways that I can live where I don't have to necessarily depend on the system that seems to have failed me?
Well, I think it feeds into a lot of different areas that we are currently experiencing. You know, there was a rebirth of camping and being outdoors this past year since with lockdown. There is, as you mentioned, this interest in looking at alternative ways of living, quote, not fully within our normal society. And there is some compelling content in the show. Not a lot. Is it enough to get a thumbs up, Christopher?
Not with me. I was glad I watched it, but I think the whole show could have been way better.
Yeah. Or shorter.
I'm not going to give it a thumbs up. I'm actually going to give it one thumb down because I really only liked one person out of all those characters as far as being interesting, as having a good storyline. For the most part, it was all about Bear Claw. They should have just made a whole show about Bear Claw. It would have been way better.
I absolutely agree with you. And I wonder where he is now because they had all these guys suffered from one type of severe weather event or another. But especially for Bear Claw, their extreme weather events have only gotten worse over the past few years. And I do wonder how they've coped with that.
You're talking about fires.
Well, yeah, fires, but also Joe in the cave had not only the earthquake, but then also the flooding to deal with. Now, he's probably not really been affected too much by the extreme weather, but over this past year, a month ago, they had the heat dome over the Northwest, which would have affected both Doc and Bear Claw. So I would love to see a follow-up, see how these guys are doing.
Well, if we do a follow-up, let's do it on heat stroke, and we can find out where these guys are.
Sounds good.
So, Jay, what is your rating? What are your thoughts on this show?
Initially, I was kind of positive on the show, and then one thumb went down from being up, and then the other one went down. So I'm not giving a thumbs down, but I'm also not giving any thumbs up. I'm totally neutral on the show. Should you watch the show? I'll tell you how. The only way you should watch this show is if you're watching it on a device where you can tap the screen to advance it 10 to 15 seconds, because that cuts down the show a lot. And I did that, and I cut the show probably in half by being able to do that, just to cut through the parts that they were redoing or the transitions between them. So, yeah. And because,
good advice,
because of that, good advice. You can't give it a thumbs up if you're skipping through half the show. Can't do it. But I can't give it a thumbs down because of Bearclaw. Bearclaw saves it. If it hadn't been for Bearclaw, if they had some other numbnuts on there instead of Bearclaw, it probably would have gotten two thumbs down.
All right, James. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
this is a good one.
See you next week.
I'll talk to you soon. Thank you. Bye.
PopSub Podcast has been brought to you by Marcus in Motion. For more information, go to popsubpodcast.com. To contact PopSub Podcast, go to info@popsubpodcast. Thank you.
A podcast. Is it gonna last with the freaky cast?
Wonder where I'm going.
What's up, cast? What's up, cast? What's up, cast?
Life getting you down? Is your head always drooping towards the floor? And then seeing your horrible floor just makes you feel that much worse? What to do? Floor again. Whoopee.